Greetings and welcome on board WDKOK. I'm Mark Lawrence. We're going to interview two folks today from the North Central Regional Office of DEP, the State Department of Environmental Protection, on some of our On the Mark programs. We talked about impediments and permitting as it relates to development, and this is just sound advice for everybody to know anyway. So we're going to present our interview here on Sunrise, and we'll have some excerpts on our On the Mark program. Jared Dressler is here, the Acting Regional Director of DEP's North Central Office. Jared, welcome aboard. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Oh, I really do appreciate it. I just think it's great that we get to talk about this. I think everybody has a half an idea of what DEP really does, so I think it's great that we're going to try to talk about this today. And Megan Lehman happens to be a planner by profession and is the Community Relations Coordinator for the State Department of Environmental Protection up in Williamsport. So, Megan, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, I do appreciate it. I just think it's got to be brought up and talked about what you do, what you don't do, what somebody else is regulating, and you mentioned before we recorded that the most, like some fractionally small amount of permits ever get denied that people seek for, but most get approval. They work through them, and you go through the levels, and you get your permits, right?
Correct. I don't have the number right offhand, but I would say it's probably less than 0.1% ever get denied. For the most part, we work on, especially we pride ourselves in the North Central region of having good relationships with the regulated community, the local elected leaders, legislators, and we work with those folks to try to promote a good, healthy relationship. So what we found is with good relationships, good communication, our permitting process improves greatly and is much more efficient.
Megan, same idea, this idea that there's not myths, but there's a lot more to know about DEP.
Sure. And when Jared was talking about denials, it is very rare, like he said, to have an outright denial. We have a process, and the process works absolutely best when folks come to talk to us before they submit any paperwork. So they could have informal discussions or what we sometimes call a pre-application meeting, depending on how big or complex the project is. It may involve multiple programs within DEP, or it may be fairly simple. And what happens when people go through that process is they might come and say, well, we're interested in doing this. And then they find out, here's the part of the property we really shouldn't even try to do anything, because that's going to be harder. So, okay, we don't have to go down that road. Let's focus our development here, or let's rearrange some things. Or sometimes if it's an industrial facility, they may decide to do things in phases. There are all sorts of ways that our staff can help them work through and make things more efficient. And so anytime there's an outright denial, it's something kind of went wrong along the way. We'd rather work with folks. And sometimes people withdraw an application because they come in, they find out what it's going to entail, and they realize maybe this isn't the right fit, or maybe we want to go back and rework something and come back from a different angle, that sort of thing.
I think one thing to real quick to mention is each site is unique, each project that's proposed is unique. So we by communicating with us up front, we're able to look at those unique attributes and determine the best path forward and kind of counsel those applicants to the best, most efficient path forward.
We'll start with the North Central Office. What do you cover? What do you do there?
Sure. So, again, we implement the policies and procedures and regulations from our central office in Harrisburg for the 14-county area right smack dab in the north central part of the state. Our region's flush, and we've been blessed with natural resources being mostly undeveloped to the north and increasingly more populated and agriculturally driven to the south. As far as staffing, we have approximately 110 staff covering 6 primary programs that regulate everything from air quality, waste management, surface water quality, safe drinking water, and of course brownfields and redevelopment. Most programs are structured similarly with a permitting section and then an inspection and compliance section, with other tasks such as like grant oversight, biological assessments, and even an emergency response program. And then many of our staff, in terms of our staff makeup, have a technical background, as we employ many engineers, biologists, geologists, and other environmental professionals. So, and the last thing I kind of say on that part is we live and we recreate where we work. So our staff are very invested in the communities in which we live and it's where we work. So,
so you're not some outside agency that came in to say no to folks. You're here to say yes, that you're my neighbor and we'd like to be able to do this well. And as the acting regional director, what do you do to sort of tell us the decisions that making that goes into running the office?
Into running the office? That's kind of comical, actually. I'm a biologist by trade.
Okay. Well, that makes it ideally suited
And I've worked throughout the throughout multiple programs. And I thought, to be honest, I thought a lot of times this job might entail dealing with big projects, big permits, big inspections. Interestingly enough, a lot of times it's just about people. It's mostly about running the office, office personalities, dealing with the legislators, dealing with county commissioners. There are some big projects that we have to weigh in on, but it's mostly, in my opinion, keeping things moving, empowering people to make the right decisions in the right moment.
And still working through the pandemic, remotely under some circumstances for some folks, I suppose.
We are still working remotely part-time, most folks. That was a big change. That was a big change. In some ways, a lot of positive change came from that in terms of we had to pivot very quickly to a lot more electronic applications. So we have electronic permitting, we have electronic inspections now, we have electronic filing, which has increased in some degree, a little bit of growing pains early on, but I think now it's increasing efficiency and there's a lot of opportunities that you can see that will increase both efficiency and a lot of times transparency as well for folks.
Megan, there's nothing wrong for me to ask you what you do as community relations coordinator. We see you all over. We see your name in some of the news releases. We see you at events, the Turtle Creek Creek Restoration effort. You were there, and of course, then you were on Sunrise also here talking about that a couple of years ago. So tell us what you do.
Sure. My job is really a support service to the entire region. So Jared mentioned we have multiple programs. I don't think you gave the list. I can give the list if that helps.
The programs?
Yeah.
I sort of touched on the programs, but I can touch on the number of inspections and some of that data if you'd like.
Well, let me where I was going with that is that I get to do something different almost every day. And sometimes I don't know when I start where the day's going to end up. So it could be focused on safe drinking water or air quality or brownfields or something with oil and gas where there's a spill somewhere. It's basically what are people interested in. I have to respond to media inquiries, which, you know, they can be very feast or famine, obviously, when something big is happening in the region. And I do a lot of proactive communications as well. So it's writing for DEP's various products like our website, blog, newsletter, press releases are a huge part of it. We've been doing a lot of events. Thankfully, now we're able to start doing events again in the last year or so since a lot of that was put on pause during COVID. But we get out and try to not just react to what's going on, but to highlight some of the success stories in the region, people that are doing great things to restore legacy environmental contamination or damage, such as, say, acid mine drainage cleanups or things like that, and people that are using new technologies or are using grant funds to do really good things, environmental education programs. It really runs a wide range. So I have a very interesting job, and I enjoy it a lot.
Well, and I think you do a fabulous job of it because we just see you all over. You know, we see you at schools and like you said, in the news releases and at events where people are doing something good to the environment, sort of a, kind of get your picture in the paper kind of situation. There's some of that out there, so that happens. All right, well, by way of description of what you are doing, you started doing a question that I'll ask Jared to finish, and that's, what does DEP do there? Explain your sort of your regulation areas and what you're involved with.
So, sure. I mean, generally speaking, again, it's about six primary programs. We have that permitting and inspection. So in terms of some general numbers, we receive roughly 2,500 authorization requests every 12 months. So for instance, I think you had talked about some of the development regulations in terms of our waterways obstruction section. They receive almost 400 a year within a 12-month period. Some of those authorization requests obviously just take minutes. Others can be extremely large and complex projects. In 2021, we received approximately 700 complaints that we need to respond to. Again, some very simple, some might take a year or more to sift through. We have over 1,000 inspections in the past 12 months. That's after I've subtracted out some of our very simple administrative inspections. So more of your standard inspections, roughly 1,000 in 12 months. And we also provide technical support and oversight to the conservation districts with the counties.
So you were out inspecting when somebody is putting a new fuel tank in or some sort of a chemical process on a farm or something along that line?
Again, yes. And the programs are very specific. So in the fuel tank example, we have a tanks program that resides within our environmental cleanups and brownfields program. We have agricultural inspectors that deal with farm inspections in our waterways and wetlands section. We inspect discharges outside of an industry or, let's say, a wastewater treatment plant. Air emissions, we inspect those as well.
All right, so keep going down your list of things that you do.
Waste management, we would deal with illegal dumping, landfills, transfer stations.
Recycling?
Along this line, we do deal with recycling. There's some sort of ancillary programs that that sort of fit a niche, so like a recycling. We do have a member emergency response team that's comprised of about 7 or 8 members. So if there's a after hours incident, we can at least have some boots on the ground.
All right, and if a builder or developer, we've spoken to some of these types of folks in the past on our show, you get involved in residential or commercial developments.
Absolutely.
And what are you regulating under those circumstances?
That could touch a couple different programs. Primarily, I think most folks are attuned to our earth disturbance activities. We would regulate sort of the post-construction stormwater and the earth disturbance. That would be through our waterways and wetland section.
Earth disturbance might be a funny term to other folks. What does that mean exactly?
Are you digging dirt?
Okay.
Are you digging dirt?
Not just a little.
Not just a little. Typically, and I don't want to go down the road too deep in terms of permitting because that can get complex. And to be perfectly honest, it's hard for me to remember all 6 programs, regulations across all things. But generally speaking, if you're over an acre of disturbance, oftentimes you would need to have what's called an NPDES, a National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit. And that you would need that permit in order to move forward with your project. If you're under that, you might need what's called an erosion and sedimentation control plan. A lot of those authorizations are handled via your county conservation district, which we provide technical oversight and assistance to. And then depending upon the specifics of your project and where you're located, you may need an individual permit if you're in, let's say, what we call a special protection watershed. That would fall back to our section.
All right. Now, if I go to a construction site and I see the erosion and sedimentation capture mechanisms, those tubular devices that stop runoff water, that's what you're regulating. In that case, it's storm water, and you want to stop sediment from coming off the site?
Typically, yes. It's typically they're dealing with the sediment and then a lot of the pollutants that might be within the sediment. Some of the nitrogen and phosphorus that might be sort of tied to that sediment as well, that can affect water quality. So there's multiple things that we're trying to work to prevent there.
And for the most part around here, we're making progress. We hear about streams where trout are returning. It's in Montour County, Limestone Run or something. One of the creeks has trout in it now that didn't used to. So that's not an accident. That's because of hard work and watershed associations and DEP.
Absolutely. Turtle Creek, you had mentioned before, is a fantastic example of something very local to the Lewisburg area, where there's been a great partnership to restore that watershed, where it was started out with more or less a single landowner working with some folks in our grant section, in our waterways and wetlands section, and then they moved that through multiple other agencies. They gathered in other landowners to kind of make it so you get a better bang for your buck, and we're trying to restore, I think it's a 13 square mile drainage area watershed. You know, it's just one farm, one property at a time. But you can really start to see progress. It's good to always temper the expectations. A lot of times I've seen folks say, I want to see trout in that stream next year. It's more incremental. And that's something I would probably touch on from DEP's perspective. A lot of things are in terms of perspective. So if you're a developer, you have the perspective of how do these regulations or how do these decisions affect this particular development, as well you should, in terms of your bottom line, how long is it taking, what are the impacts. And while some of those impacts might not seem significant to you, the department, we're charged with having a slightly different perspective, a more broader 30,000-foot view perspective. And the one thing I will say is a lot of times impacts, no single impact typically impairs a watershed. It's mostly sort of death by 1,000 bee stings. Mm. It's that cumulative effect of one after another after another. More stormwater, more sediment, more pollutants, more whatever starts to, will tip the scales eventually. So that's sort of the perspective we're coming at. So I think with a lot of issues, neither perspective is incorrect. It's just we're coming at it from a kind of a different angle.
Well, and I think in the case of a permit denial, that they're probably so rare because by the time it gets to the point to approve or deny, they're probably withdrawn if they just didn't pick the right piece of land for the right project or something, and so they withdraw before, you know, so you don't have to deny it.
And in most cases, 99.9% of the cases, you don't get to that point because of the discussions and the back and forth, you know, where you're trying to sort of rectify those two perspectives along the process. And eventually, you know, there's some give and take there at times, depending on how complex the project is.
Right. I know you work with developers to help them to plan, help and work with county planners and say, you know, this is what can work here according to this regulation. This will never work. You know, this is protected wetland that encroaches on a protected waterway. So I'm sorry, there's not going to be anything there. You know, that's going to be plainly obvious to folks. Turtle Creek, you mentioned that. So you were involved in that, or at least helping to spread the word. Was it the Lynn Conservancy or North Central Pennsylvania Conservancy?
North Central Pennsylvania Conservancy.
So, yeah, they've done so much of that around here, helping do the stream restoration. Who was involved? I know the Union County planners get involved. This is a little quiz for you. If you can name one other entity was involved in Turtle Creek.
Oh, I can name almost all of them.
Oh, good.
I lived and breathed that because we created that Turtle Creek story map, if you remember, and I pulled all that material together. And Turtle Creek is really a story of the power of partnerships, and Jared alluded to that several times. This is not something where DEP is just going to say, yeah, we're going to go out and do this, and we go out and we do it, or any one entity. So it's the Conservancy, the Union County Conservation District, the landowners themselves. We can never overlook the landowners. They have to be willing to do it, and they work with their goals for their property, you know, for their working farm. And then beyond that, the Pennsylvania Fish and Boat Commission, and then I believe one of the watershed organizations has been involved in a few of them, and I'm not going to name the wrong one, but those are all entities that have been involved. So, and then there's also contractors that they work with that have learned how to do the, you know, the log veins and the mud sills and the work. This whole team has kind of come down to almost like a German clock. They just know what they're doing. They come into the property. They figure it out. And so they've been able to replicate that success more efficiently each time. And so every year they do several more projects. And they do them not just in Turtle Creek. They use the same playbook in other watersheds around our 14-county region. And that partnership, that North Central Stream Partnership, has won the Governor's Award for Environmental Excellence and I think several others. So happy that you mentioned it. And I think that's one of those examples of how teamwork really can achieve those things that, like Jared said, it might seem daunting at first. It might be incremental, but all of a sudden you've got major results after a period of time.
One thing I'll just add is this might sound odd, but it's a story I wish we never had to tell. Hmm. Right? It is a great story. Mm-hmm. It's a great partnership, and it provides a lot of pride to folks. I mean, I know that some of the universities came down, and they were able to do some surveying to show the improvement in the stream.
That's who I missed.
And that's great.
Bucknell and Susquehanna.
But really, I'd be great if we never got the press for that. Mm-hmm. Because if we do our job on the front end, and if we do things right with proper planning on the front end, you don't get to a point where a stream ever gets to be impaired.
Well, half of your regulations didn't exist
when that stream was impaired. But I'm saying from the perspective of now why we do that. Absolutely, mm-hmm. There's all kinds of reasons. So, for instance, I've had some personal experience with Bab Creek up, which is a tributary to the Pine Creek.
Right. A complete restoration?
That was a complete restoration.
Yeah.
Extremely expensive in terms of having to actually treat acid mine drains with an active treatment system. But, yeah, that stream has come back completely. And, again, same thing. There was the regulations that were in place at the time. I don't know that anybody did things that were necessarily wrong, but now we know. Now we can look back. And so if we don't have, I would rather not have to tell the story of how much effort it took to get something back when you have it in the first place.
Right. Yeah. We've done discussions here about impediments to building, and rules and regulations, and DEP is part of that conversation, and part of it is supply chains, and part of it is worker shortage, and you know, part of it is finding available land and these kind of things. For DEP's end of things, when a builder or a developer says, well, you know, we can't build here, we're having trouble, we won't be able to, and DEP's part of this discussion, what are you telling them? What kind of impediments are they running into if DEP has the rule book there? I mean, you mentioned wetlands, so there's one factor.
Oh, in terms of the factors that might, sure. So oftentimes, we start with what kind of watershed, how is it regulated? Is it special protection watershed? Is it just sort of your general non-special protection watershed? And what that, how that would factor in is in the levels of permitting. We oftentimes have tiers of permitting across most of our programs, but especially if we're talking about on the water side. You may have some projects or some activities that factor in as a waiver. You tell us what you're going to do, and by definition, it's waived, it's not needed. You don't need a permit. Typically, most things that are under a non-special protection watershed, which we consider high quality or exceptional value, if you're not in one of those watersheds, you might be able to get what's called a general permit, meaning if you meet the general conditions, you apply, you get the general requirements of that permit. Sort of no questions asked. There's not a lot of ambiguity. It's very straightforward, and typically the processing time for those is much quicker. So in some cases, with a pre-application meeting that we talked about, we're able to guide folks to where they might fall within a general permit instead of the next tier up, which would be considered an individual permit, where you oftentimes have, in essence, we review it a little bit more in depth, and you might get individual requirements.
Okay, so those are some of the things we want to add to that?
I was going to say, Jared, did you want to mention water or sewer at all? I know a lot of that typically tends to be municipal, but DEP does have some involvement in some cases.
Sure, sure. So obviously we have the wetland impacts, the stream resources, the aquatic resources that are on site. But if you're talking about a development, oftentimes you have to provide for safe drinking water and you have to provide for proper sewage. So where that is sited makes a huge difference. If you're on public water, public sewer, that makes things go much, much smoother than if you're trying to figure out how to supply, you know, well water or some other water, you know, drinking water to the folks, or whether you're trying to deal with an Act 537 sewage plan that the township or municipality might have to update. And some of these things fall within our purview. And for instance, sometimes on the sewage side, that may fall to the local municipality through their sewage enforcement officer.
I'd like folks to be left with the impression that you work cooperatively with developers and builders and planners and architects and try to get these jobs done. Please.
Absolutely. I've said this before to some other folks, but I always thought when I used to deal with some permitting myself, those permits and those projects that moved most efficiently were typically those with the individuals that I either had a relationship with or I somehow garnered trust with. If you trust someone, when they put it on paper that this is what I'm going to do and this is what I say I'm going to do and you believe they're going to do it, and then you tend to question less, you tend to, it tends to make things go smoother.
Likewise, you might have a scofflaw somewhere that says, I'm going to do this, that, and the other thing, and you come there and those things aren't done, or they're not done well, or they're not done
right. If the last 10 projects correctly that you've worked with somebody on have been one deficiency after another, after another, after another, whether you want to feel this way or not, you tend to question things, and it tends to just slow things down.
So. All right. Same question.
Actually, I wanted to pose kind of from the bigger picture, about 1,000, you know, what is it, 1,000-foot view?
30,000-foot view.
I'm mixing my metaphors. But when you look
That's like satellite distance, just for your information.
Yeah. when you look at the purpose of environmental regulations or even the zoning and subdivision, those municipal things as well, typically the enabling legislation and those codes are written explaining up front that there's a purpose to protect public health, safety, private property rights, so on and so forth, as well as the environment and natural resources. And I think people sometimes forget that if you don't do things right up front, you can have a whole host of problems on the back end. So while the regulations getting through that process may seem like burdensome, to use the term that was posed to us, I think what we end up seeing often is when things in the past haven't been done well, we hear it on the side of complaints. So we get complaints from the public. I have a stormwater problem. It's coming over from my neighbor's property, or somebody is dumping something they shouldn't, or there's a septic issue that's causing me hassles. My well water is contaminated. We get all sorts of complaint calls, and some of them are things that DEP can, and some are things that, unfortunately, we do not have the ability to assist people with. They have other avenues for that. But if we can help protect the environment and protect people's interest in their properties, I think it's a win-win in the long run, right? So not only does nobody want to have a sewage problem coming from, you know, the neighbor or a stormwater problem, but people want to live in places that are beautiful and have protected and abundant natural resources. And property values typically are lower in areas where those things have been degraded. So if you think of an area that has been suffered repeat damaging floods, or areas that have legacy acid mine drainage, what are the property values there? And so what is the opportunity cost for the people that live there having lost those resources? So a lot of what we do is trying to protect our natural resources, but also help people have better, I think, better quality of life now and into the future.
So every time you're in a pre-application and you have to say no to somebody on something, there's three or four neighbors up the street saying, yeah. Okay, good. Well, thank you.
First, I'd say we never start with no.
Oh, that's yes. True.
I did tell you that.
Tell me about that.
So, yeah, we never, that was sort of a mantra my predecessor always said, was we never start with no. We always just start with listening. So you got to listen to understand what it is that what is the project, what is it that they're asking for. And again, I heard the comment from the gentleman from Fine Line Homes where he talked about sometimes those regulations sort of push a project in a direction they didn't think it was going to go, and they found a different site, maybe in our mind a better site. I don't know. So that
sure,
kind of comes
or a workaround or a bridge or a pipe,
right,
or something,
yeah, so
that takes care of it.
We typically don't start with no. We try to.
Well, I always tell my staff, they come to me and they say, we have a problem. I say, no, we only have solutions. We haven't found them all yet, but that's really what we have. An additional comment, anything else from either of you that you'd like to add to our discussion? We'll start with you, Megan. Something additional you'd like to tell us?
Sure. I think one of my favorite things about DEP and something I'm most passionate about from melding my DEP side and my past in land use planning is our Brownfields program. And I know that when you had that previous discussion.
Brownfields. Industrial,
yes.
Properties that are no longer used.
Typically industrial, sometimes, former sites in older communities, core communities typically that are underutilized. There either is some form of environmental contamination, or often just the perception or fear of that there may be something. So going through that process to help assess those properties, determine, is there a problem? Does it need to be cleaned up? What can we do? And ultimately, the goal is to bring them back into a productive use, whether that's industrial, or often more frequently now we're seeing, the footprint of a factory in 1900 is probably not often sized right for like our modern facilities, right? So maybe that would be better now. It's in the middle of a neighborhood. That could be new housing. That could be senior housing. We have an example in Lock Haven with a wonderful facility that we cut the ribbon on a few mm-hmm. years ago. So that is such a rewarding thing, to see properties that nobody wants to do anything with because they're scared, and see them come back online and become productive parts of the tax base. No longer an eyesore, no longer a safety hazard. That's just really good stuff. And so I want to put in a plug for that, because you did mention most of the focus that you hear on development of homes is on, you know, greenfield sites, but we also have that side too, because those core communities need the people, you know, to live in them, whether it's starter homes or downsizing homes for seniors or whatever the case may be. I think that's something that we're really proud of at DEP.
If somebody doesn't believe in brownfields, tell them to go up to, what is it, Maynard Avenue in Williamsport, where the steel company was there, or some industrial building was up there, and now Penn College has reutilized mm-hmm. it. So took down industrial buildings and put up a great green space and open space in buildings.
Go to Miller Center.
Yeah, in Lewisburg. The Miller Center, right. That's true. The giant in the Miller Center.
Okay. Great example there.
And we actually have a program now focusing on brownfields for recreation. So trails, river trails especially. These things are jewels in some of our communities that are continuing to grow and expand.
Additional comment?
Well, as a biology major and not a communications major, I don't know. This was a different experience for me. But I guess to get back to sort of what you talked about Turtle Creek and restoration, and even when I didn't want to, like I mentioned about not wanting to tell the story, I will tell the story of when I was in college in Lock Haven University way back in the day. I won't tell you how many years ago. I can remember seeing folks fish along the river in the West Branch and people sort of mocking them, like, why would you fish in this dead river? And now, if you look at the Fish and Boat Commission data and you start, I mean, I kayak all the way up as far as almost Renova, you're really seeing a much more robust aquatic community. That's 15 river miles, 20 river miles upstream. That's really coming back from a lot of the projects, especially AMD-driven projects that are ongoing. So a little bit makes a difference. Again, I kind of get back to that perspective of the perspective that we come from is a little bit, that penny a day really does make a difference when you're talking about a lot of days.
Yeah, the problems weren't created overnight and they won't be solved overnight.
Correct. Well, I remember when we went to the Buffalo Creek Watershed Association, a remediation site or a treatment site, acid rain treatment site up at the top of the mountain there. All this stuff, and I said, well, where's the output? And it's this little tiny rivulet that comes out. I said, all this for that? And they said, well, there was poison that was coming out of here before, and now it's plausible stuff that, you know, clean water that is really supporting quite a bit of wildlife. Well, thank you both so much for coming in. Jared Dressler is here, Acting Regional Director of the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection North Central Regional Office. Megan Lehman is a planner by career, but now Community Relations Coordinator with DEP in Williamsport. Thank you both so much for coming in.
Really appreciate it. Thank you.